Bill Buckley here, and it's time for our weekly tech update with the Gadget Detective himself. You can find him on Twitter, where he is at Gadget Detective. He's Fevzi Turkalp. Hello again, Fevzi.
Hello there.
And when I saw that story on the BBC News about Facebook blocking Australian users from sharing or viewing news, I, of course, immediately thought about you, because we had talked about the possibility of this happening before it did, hadn't we? And then, lo, it did. What has been your assessment of the situation from there on?
Yeah, I mean, quite disgraceful. So the Australians are in the process of bringing in a law that quite reasonably says that if Facebook and other social media companies such as Google make use of news stories that are, you know, created, original news stories that are sourced and written by other businesses, that they should pay something towards the cost of those. They benefit from having those news stories in their news feed, and people get their news via Facebook, but they get it for nothing, essentially, and the law says they should pay something for it. Both Google and Facebook were negotiating with the news companies in Australia, but as the law progressed, Google signed contracts with three new news organizations, and Facebook instead pulled the plug, and people woke up on Thursday morning in Australia not only unable to access news, but unable to share news as well. And all of this in the middle of a global pandemic. So, you know, it just shows what companies' priorities are, I suspect.
You clearly come down, you know, very firmly on one side rather than the other on this, then. Do you think the government could have handled it any better to somehow stave off this situation?
Well, Not really.
No, okay. Maybe the answer is just a simple no to that. Yeah.
This is a case where, you know, this has been a long time coming. These companies were supposedly negotiating with the news organisations in good faith, so if they were negotiating, they accepted the principle that something should be paid. And instead, what's really interesting is that you have organisations now that are large enough to push back against nation state governments.
Yeah.
And that's really dangerous. And the reason why it's a big deal, so if this was a magazine and the magazine said, we're not carrying news anymore, no one would really care. You can buy the magazine or not. The point is that companies like Facebook, and not only Facebook, have this near monopolistic position, such that if they remove news content from their news feed, a lot of people no longer get news. And in fact, all that's left behind is fake news, because fake news doesn't count as news and doesn't come under the terms of this. So by default, misinformation, disinformation and fake news is being given a leg up by removing the legitimate voices. And and as I say, when people get so much of their information, including emergency information, via Facebook has become a utility. It's not really, you know, just a magazine as on the internet, as it were. And it needs to step up and be treated as such, you know. And for one of the world's most profitable companies to say that they think it's okay to get, so they get about, you know, 4% of their revenues because they carry news, which they're not, and that doesn't sound like much, but when you're talking about Facebook's revenue, that's huge.
Why
should they not pay for that? It's not like they can't afford it, for goodness sake.
I suppose an important question, in case it happens here or elsewhere as well, is how have the good folk of Australia been coping?
Yeah, that's good. That's a good question. It's interesting because some have tried to cope by using VPNs, which are these software tools that allow you to appear to be somewhere else. So they thought, if I can appear to be outside Australia, I can access Australian news. But actually, anyone outside Australia trying to access Australian news via Facebook will also not be able to get it. Right. So that's kind of...
that's been closed off then, right?
Yeah, yes. I mean, I think it's a... I think Facebook have shot themselves in the foot, because what this does is it focuses attention on... not just in Australia, but across the world, on the fact that Facebook is so hugely powerful and can and does take action like this in a global pandemic. And some will draw the conclusion that the social media companies need to be more tightly regulated. Others may even say that they need to be broken up. And I really think that Facebook, for the sake of relatively small sums of money to them, even on a global basis, have made a strategic error. It's interesting that Google, who has very similar concerns and position, has actually already signed deals with three companies. And, you know, we suppose that they will make good on those deals. So what's the difference between Facebook and Google in this respect? I would say character and wisdom, actually. And that's not to say that Google is without, you know, Google is without blame at all, but it's just really quite interesting that they've done this and that they've chosen to try and punish the people of an entire country at a time when people's lives depend on news. Cutting off people from news in the middle of a pandemic may cost lives.
You see, for somebody of my age, it seems a funny thing to say, cutting. Of course, they're not cutting off people from news, because the television and the radio and newspapers and all kinds of other things online, I mean, it's only one way of getting your news. I was amazed to hear you say that, you know, there's a large number of people who don't access news any other way now. Is that really so, fair to say?
It is the case, and it's increasingly the case. And if we want people to engage with the democratic process, then they should have access to news. I would love if also this ban meant that others were able to step up to the mark, perhaps even aided and abetted by the government, and try and do some of this. But the fact is that for a lot of people, Facebook is the internet. They spend their whole online lives in
Good
Facebook.
Gracious.
But that's been Facebook's business model for ages. It tries to give you everything within Facebook, so you never have to leave the app. You can get news, you can find a relationship, you can do whatever you like inside Facebook. And because their business model is predicated on the fact that they will try to keep your eyes on their screen, Facebook screen, for as long as possible, so they can learn as much about you as possible, and then they can use that information to target ever more ads and ever more targeted ads to you. So you know, we are the raw material. We think we're the customer. We're not. We're the raw material that Facebook uses to make money. And it's just, yeah. It should be a wake-up call. And I know the European Union has been discussing similar laws to make social, it's not just Facebook, but to make social media giants pay for the news that they use and profit from. And I hope that this acts as a spur and that no one will be intimidated. You know, the Australian government said, you know, we're not going to be intimidated. And for a government to talk about not being intimidated by a company, which didn't exist 20 odd years ago, by the way, you know, it tells us all we need to know, and it should be a wake up call. And Facebook should put its act in order, and governments need to take a firm stance. And also they need to act together. Our governments now actually need to act together. Actually, we should act with the European Union in this and stand together and push back. Facebook is not unassailable. They can be pushed back against. Do you remember when 2 or 3 weeks ago they wanted to make changes to the Facebook and WhatsApp information sharing rules? So they wanted to share, to take more information from WhatsApp users and share it with Facebook. First of all, what that told us was a huge amount that that Facebook was already sucking out of WhatsApp users' information, but also that the only place where that couldn't happen was the EU and UK because of GDPR regulations, and that's an example of privacy laws that protected EU and UK citizens, but there's no equivalent of that at the moment in Australia or America or other parts of the world.
Well, there are the views of Fevzi Turkal regarding the Facebook v Australian government debacle. Bill Buckley at the helm, halfway through our tech update of the week with the gadget detective, Fevzi Turkal, and on now to our gadget of the week, and we're going retro, Fevzi. This is fun.
We are. So this is two Nokia phones that have been recreated. So if you go back about, I think it was about 14 years ago, Nokia launched the Nokia 6300 and the Nokia 8000. And these were really before smartphones. And they were what we now call feature phones or candy bar phones, non-smartphones. So they're called candy bar phones because they're not, they don't flip open and they're not big like a smartphone. They're about the size and shape of a bar of chocolate.
That's interesting, in itself.
Hence candy bar.
Yeah.
You can see which side of the Atlantic the expression came from, I guess.
You can.
So these are now called the Nokia 6300 4G, and the 4G being the difference, and Nokia 8000 4G. And so the styling is very much like the originals, but updated. So they're not smartphones. They don't have huge screens. So the 6300 has got a 2.4-inch screen, and the 8000 4G has got a 2.8-inch screen. The joy of that, by the way, is that the battery lasts forever and ever without needing a recharge, because it doesn't have this very super powerful processor, and the screen doesn't chew up lots. So they have basic cameras, but when I say basic, I mean basic. But they're upgraded in some important ways. So, for example, 4G. So they're 4G capable, as the names would suggest. And why would that be important if you're not using it as a smartphone? Because you can use 4G on these phones to make high-quality voice calls. So instead of traditionally voice calls use a 2G network, but in some areas 2G is poor and 4G is better, so you can make good quality voice calls because it's got 4G capability. At the same time, you can do voice over Wi-Fi as well. So again, if the cellular signal is weak in your area, but you've got Wi-Fi running, the Wi-Fi can make up for the loss of data and allow you to make and receive calls on your normal phone number in the normal way. Now, this was a trick reserved for smartphones before now, but now these feature phones can do it as well. And because it's got 4G and it's got Wi-Fi capability, it can work as a hotspot. That's to say, it can take the data in via 4G and spread it out around the local area as Wi-Fi, so that you can then connect your other tablets and gaming devices and so forth to Wi-Fi as if it was coming from a land-based internet connection. But here, when you're out and about, you can use this to create a portable Wi-Fi hotspot. So it can do all that. The operating system is also interesting. It's not Android, as is the case on almost every phone that's not an Apple phone. It's something called KaiOS, K-A-I-O-S, and it's got its own little app store. It's very cute. So you can download apps such as Google Assistant, which means that you can talk to these phones and get answers from them. If you want, you can have Google Maps on there, although the screen is rather tiny, but at a pinch you can use it. And if you really have no shame, then you can download WhatsApp and Facebook apps as well. It's just quite interesting because you can do the basics of what you need to get by. And for a lot of people, WhatsApp and Facebook, and there's a reason why they're on there. They are, the bread and butter things that a lot of people use their phones for. But it allows you to do a sort of semi-digital detox because you're not playing with a myriad of apps and surfing the internet endlessly and so forth. You can make high-quality calls. You can connect things up to Wi-Fi. You can talk to your phone and have it talk back to you and do a basic bit of mapping and a bit of WhatsApp and Facebooking. All good. And then the price is also good. The 6300 4G is this price is £59.99.
Oh, yeah.
And the 8000 is £79.99. And obviously you can find them a little bit cheaper than that if you look around. And I just think that that's a great thing. And also, if you want to have a phone where you don't necessarily want to put £1,000 smartphone at risk. There are some people who go, for example, not anymore, but some people used to go out, drink too much, leave their very expensive smartphone on the back seat of a taxi or something like
guilty,
that.
Guilty, sir. Guilty as charged after a night out in the Balti Triangle in Birmingham.
So I guess 60 quid is kind of less painful than £1,400 or whatever one's paid for one's last smartphone. I mean, smartphones are getting incredibly expensive now. I realised, my top-of-the-range iPhone 7 Plus was about £1,000 at the time, and now the top-of-the-range iPhone is about £1,400.
Yeah.
Gone up quite a lot. So having one of these as a second device, I think, is quite good. Or just to keep you, from being obsessive with the phone.
That's features. A very good point.
It's one of the arguments for e-book readers. People sometimes, you get these electronic book readers and all they do is read electronic books. Yeah. Hence the title, e-book reader. And people say, well, why do you need that? Your iPad or your tablet can do that. But the point is your iPad and tablet can do that and 1,000 other things and gives you notifications and bings and distractions and everything. Mm-hmm. Whereas with an e-book reader, you can just read a book. It's kind of novel that way, if you'll pardon the pun. I'm sorry, I couldn't resist. But in a similar way, a phone like this, which on the face of it is very limiting, can actually be very freeing, I think.
And I quite agree.
From from those aspects.
And the only thing I would add to everything that you've said is that they look lovely as well. I've just had a look at their images online, and they're dinky little things. I like them a lot.
Yeah, they are smartphones without being smartphones. If you take my meaning from that. So,
the cost finally.
Yeah, so just a shade under 60 for the 6300 4G and a shade under 80 for the 8000 4G. And I've given them each 4 stars out of 5. Not for everybody, but I think it's a very good compromise between a fully fledged smartphone and what would be known as a feature phone, or if you like, they don't call it this, but think of it as a dumb phone as opposed to a smartphone. This is somewhere in between the two. This is not dumb, but maybe not particularly gifted.
Well, I'm giving you 5 stars as I normally do, and if you want to find out more, Fevzi is on Twitter @GadgetDetective, and we shall speak in 7 days.